You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, March 16th, episode 3905, brought to you today by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
Well, Jamie, I have a couple of weeks of very fun guests planned for us, and we're going to be doing a lot of Where Are They Nows, and we're talking to some of our friends that we haven't talked to in years, so I'm looking forward to that. Today, Sally is checking in from Eventing Nation with a preview of the Kentucky 3-Day event. We're about a month away from that. Also, we're going to get some scoop on the Maryland 5-Star situation and what's happening in the Olympics coming up. All the preparations for that going on right now, too. Auditor Page is going to stop by to chat about the annual Bull Run Hunt Vixen Hunt and her win of the Best Barbie Award. Plus, this day in equine history brings us to the unluckiest loser in racing history. That's all coming up today. And then on the Auditor Post Show, Jamie and I are going to answer some auditor questions that were posed to us this morning. So we're going to get that. So this is an announcement or a post I saw from a weatherman. There are currently tornado, blizzard, winter storm, ice storm, severe thunderstorm, high wind, red flag warnings, freeze watches, freeze warnings, and extreme heat watches all in effect from the same storm at the same time. So I know that many of our listeners were posting that their farms took damage, and I know that there's 4 feet of snow in Upper Michigan. You guys are still getting heavy wind. The middle of the country had tornadoes. There were tornadoes in Florida south of us yesterday, and we didn't get the storms yet. Those are going to hit us this afternoon. It's something else.
The amount of wind yesterday and still right now, I mean, I ended up bringing all the horses in, and my horses live outside, but I was like, this is one of those wind events where the horses are all going to call it because they don't drink because there's so much wind. So I brought everybody in and just loaded up on electrolytes and probiotics and like whatever I can give them to keep their gut healthy, because I cannot believe we had 40 to 60 mile an hour sustained.
I saw
all
your
day.
Videos yesterday. You could barely stand up.
It was crazy. And so last night when I brought the horses in, I put all the horses in their stalls, and the wind was coming from the north, and Butters is on the south side on the end of the stalls. And a wind gust came so hard that it pushed him in his stall to the back wall. And I was like, okay, we're closing all the doors. Poor Butters, he just got blown around all day yesterday.
He wasn't heavy enough. Little
guy. He wasn't heavy enough.
You know those weight vests people run in? You needed one on Butters.
It's true. It's like put a string on him, you fly him as a kite.
Hey, I just looked at the radar now. Now, we're recording this Monday morning. It's about, 10:30 and Eastern time. And I'm seeing that the storms have now hit Western Florida. We're going to get them this afternoon, but they're all over the south. And we're talking tornado warnings and all kinds of stuff. But get this, Jamie. Behind it is the second wave. It's snowing right now in Alabama all the way into Louisiana. It's snowing.
That's insane. I would also like to point out that it was, when I woke up this morning, it was 22 degrees. And then by Friday, it's going to be 90.
Colic again,
90.
Right?
I'm like, everybody's trying to kill me. Like, they're everybody. And did you see the videos of the tractor trailers that were driving along I-40? And they were just blowing over. Yesterday, I-35 here in Oklahoma was shut down for 12 hours. Because the power lines blew down across the freeway.
I imagine the power outages have to be all the way across the country right now.
I mean, everybody. If you're in a place where you're not getting affected by anything, please let us know. We want to move there.
Because actually, this store goes all the way up into Canada from the Gulf. It's crazy. Anyway, some happier news. Reagan Miller, that name probably doesn't mean much to you. She's a 13-year-old from Seagraves, Texas. Well, she, you know how when they have the fairs and stuff, people bring their lambs in and their cows in and they show them and stuff. Well, she was at the Houston Rodeo, and she brought her lamb in, and she won grand champion, market lamb. Well, they sell those lambs at the end of each of the auctions. You know how they do that, and they raise money, and the kids get some of it, but it's also a fundraiser. Well, last year, the lamb sold for $450,000. This year, Reagan sold her lamb for $1 million.
What?
It's the first time a lamb has ever reached the seven-figure mark at the Rodeo Houston, and officially setting a new world record for a sheep. The bid came. Now, this is what makes this story really cool. The bid came from the Hildebrand family, led by Houston billionaire and oil mogul Jeffrey Hildebrand. His purchase was deeply personal, made in memory of his daughter, Brittany Ann Hildebrand, who was a longtime supporter of the rodeo, and she passed away last year at 34 years old. She was a volunteer for the rodeo for many years and was also a world-class rider who competed as a show jumper internationally and won two national championships while on the equestrian team at Texas A&M University. So they did it in her name. That's also the horse tie-in here. But how that works, people think that the kid gets to keep $1 million. That's not how that works.
I was going to say, this can't be going to the kid. No. This has to be like some sort of charity, something.
And that's what's so cool about this is what happens is there's a guaranteed cap of $45,000 for the kid, and it has to be used for their education. So it gets put into an education fund for college for the kid, which is kind of cool. It's still $45,000, right? As a 13-year-old, that's pretty cool. The remaining $955,000 goes directly to the Houston Rodeo Educational Fund, and that's expected this year. That fund is expected to contribute more than $30 million in scholarships and grants to students across Texas. So that's where that money goes. It gets put into this fund for students and grants for students for scholarships. So it's a cool deal. It's a happy story. There aren't too many of those going on in the world right now, so I thought I'd share that.
Oh, wow.
So good job for honoring the daughter that way. I think that was pretty cool. All right, let's do some daily winnies. And as soon as my computer wakes up, there it goes. It takes a break and then it doesn't want to play the music. It thinks about it for a minute. It's like, no, you're supposed to be awake. We got two of these today. You're going to do one, I'm going to do one. We have two of our auditors that accused you. Basically, they said they did marching towards death thing, and Auditor Peggy bought a Haflinger. She said she bought Zulden is a Haflinger, and she said Haflingers originate from the country of Austria in Europe. Zulden is a popular and extremely beautiful ski town resort in Austria. She went snowboarding there several times when she was still living in the Netherlands. When driving through the scenery, I remember seeing Haflingers everywhere. Even went on a guided trail ride through the mountains one time on a Haflinger, and she said that's why she named it Zulden. So congratulations.
I love it.
Yeah, so congratulations. I love that you got your new pony. She also said that Haflingers are extremely popular in Europe for Western riding, and they are lovingly called the Alpine Quarter Horses or Alpine.
Would you like to know what I call them?
What?
Okay, so keep in mind that when people send me horses for training, they don't send me the happy ones. They send me, here's what I call them, draft ponies.
They're literally
as strong as draft horses and as naughty as ponies. But again, I deal with the ones that are challenged most likely through whatever current challenge they have had in their past. But yeah, I'm like, Haflingers, yeah, girl, you go.
They are cute, though. They are cute.
They are.
And hers is adorable. So congratulations there, Peggy. All right, your turn. Let's see if it wakes up. I don't know what's wrong with this computer.
I mean, it gets the point across. That's all it's trying to do. Just doing the minimum. Well, I would like to, you guys, just a reminder, the marching towards death thing. You guys, we are all marching towards death. I noticed it when I was in homes with my mom, as she, like all the things, and it's just inevitable, and we're marching towards death. And that is why I'm like, live your life the way you want to live it, because it's going to be over in like 5 minutes. Enough about that. Point is, we have had some individuals really absorb the marching towards death thing. And I mean, I'm living proof. Like, I just flew to Bakersfield, California, and bought a stallion like an idiot. So, I mean, it's fine. It's going to be great. But I would like to point out that another auditor talking about marching towards death, she says, this is Susan, my marching towards death moment. I started riding at 49 years old. And this weekend at the age of 59, I finally threw caution to the wind and competed in my first meter five jumping class. Not only did we survive, but Bandit and I won two rounds and got second in the other and ended up champion. Yay. And these are some legit jumps. Girl, that is amazing. I am so proud of you. I mean, just do it, you guys. Do it. It doesn't have to be buying anything. It can just be like getting an experience that you have, you really want to experience. So I just think it's awesome. And I'm so proud of y'all of all the stupid crap I've said on this show. Y'all have really stuck with that one. Yeah.
In 15 years, that should be our subtitle for our show. Horses in the Morning, Marching Toward Death.
So. I mean, you don't have to buy something. Just do it. Like, oh, there you go. So Nike's going to sue me. Marching towards death. Just do it. I also would like to give another Daily Winnie to a listener, auditor, soon-to-be friend, because she is on her way here. Shelly Billings is on her way here with her horse. She is going to bring me her horse, who is going to go live at the Maytag Mountain Ranch. And so she just needed a good place for him to land and contacted me, and we worked it out with the ranch, and he's going to be heading there. They're going to pick him up this week. So he's going to lay over with me for about a week and hang out. And I'm super excited just to meet her and see the horse and get to know everybody and be a part of it. So thank you, Shelly, for trusting me and I guess inadvertently trusting the ranch, because we're going to take good care of your baby. Well, spring is finally here in some places, I guess, which means it's time to shake off the winter grime and get back on the road. But before you load up for that first show or trail ride, take a look at your trailer floors. I don't think, and this is a side note, I don't think anything stressed me out as much as my flooring in my trailer. Like, I was always scared about making sure the floor was good. Well, take a look at your trailer floor. If you're still wrestling with those heavy mud cake rubber mats or worrying about the corrosive mess hidden under them, that was me, you're starting the season with a headache that you don't need.
Worm Flooring Systems, which stands for We Eliminate Rubber Mats, offers the ultimate spring upgrade. Their permanent non-porous poured-in flooring seals your trailer's subfloor completely, ensuring that the dampness or and debris of any kind doesn't get under those mats and destroy your floor, because the mats are no longer there and you have this amazing new subfloor.
A worm floor provides a slip-resistant cushion surface that stays put, giving your horses a safer, more comfortable ride as temperatures climb. When you get home, there's no heavy lifting required, just a quick power wash, and your trailer is pristine and ready for the next adventure. Visit wormflooring.com today to find an installer near you and kick off your season with total peace of mind. That's wormflooring.com, WERM flooring.com. Well, one of my favorite people and one of my favorite things in the year is going to the Kentucky 3-Day and getting to catch up with Sally from Eventing Nation to talk about all of it. Hi, Sally.
Hey, Jamie. How's it going?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad you're here. There is so much going on in the eventing world. Like, it's making my head spin, you know?
I know. There's a lot.
So let's start with the big, you know, elephant in the room. Talk to me about Maryland. What the
elephant in the room? Yes, for sure. Well, it was a winter of questions, because we here at Eventing Nation had heard rumblings that the ground was not stable at Maryland Five Star. We weren't sure exactly what was going to happen in 2026. And then sure enough, kind of early 2026, we started to hear more confirmation that there were a lot of staffing changes happening at the basically the Maryland Stadium Authority, which had started a group that was to run events like the Maryland Five Star. So their senior staff was kind of in charge of running this event for the first 5 years of its existence.
When you say the ground was not stable, we're not talking sinkholes in the Kentucky.
No, not the grass itself. Yes, the theoretical ground for sure was what we were referring to. And just unsure of the stability of the event. We weren't sure why. We just heard things. And you know how you hear things and you don't really want to do much with it until it's fact. And then we did get confirmation that a lot of the senior staff of the event had left, along with the executive director of the Maryland Stadium Authority itself. So we just weren't sure. And then basically around mid-February, the Maryland Five Star website was deactivated. So that was not a good sign. Mm-hmm. And then finally, last week, we got confirmation from the U.S. Equestrian Federation, which basically kind of went on record and said, hey, listen, there are no longer license holders for the Five Star. And at the time, the Three Star to happen in 2026. So they are working with some new licensees for potentially holding the Five Star again, maybe next year. The Three Star Long and the USCA Young Event Horse Championships will go forward. We're not 100% sure of all the details that will happen on the same dates. We believe most likely on the same property or potentially just another section of the property. So that part of the event is safe, but we will not have the Five Star in 2026.
Wow. That just seems like, I don't know. I mean, I guess a lot can happen in a year, but it did certainly at the Maryland Five Star last year, this was certainly not something people were thinking about.
No, not necessarily. I mean, we'd heard things that, you know, maybe the budget wasn't what it used to be. And we dug into some of the budget paperwork that is viewable online, since this was all done through the state of Maryland in some way, shape, or form. And the budget had been recommended to be cut for the Maryland Five Star basically every year since it started. However, the economic impact was still pretty substantial of this event. This was more of a reflection of a budget cut throughout the entire program that was funding this, yeah, which is basically pulling funds.
There's a lot of politics too.
A lot of politics. I don't think this came down to just the Five Star. Now, the funding from the state was recommended to be cut altogether for fiscal year 27, essentially. But the Maryland Stadium Authority did really go to bat for the Five Star, and they were able to demonstrate a lot of data-backed figures on the economic impact of the event. So we don't know what that means for the future. We also, you know, this is a little bit of just speculation. I could see them even just opening up a bid altogether for a fresh bid process for anybody to apply for a North American Fall Five Star. But I think we'll see some more updates coming from that soon. But that's the part where we just don't know what's going to happen yet.
I love it.
But it will not be.
I can see it in the future. The Maryland Five Stars. Brought to you by Eventing Nation and the Horse Radio Network.
Yes, we definitely have the budget to put on a Five Star between the two of us.
It'll be fine. Yeah, we can totally do it.
I think there's like a minimum prize money we have to get to, but if we all collectively give up our salaries, we might be able to make it happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Maybe for 10th place, we could cover 10th place.
Yeah. You know what? That 10th place person will be very appreciative, okay?
Exactly. Oh my gosh. So we've got that. Then of course the best weekend all year coming up. Oh my gosh. How many days away is it? Oh, I got to count.
You know, it's funny that I feel like I should be counting, but I'm not yet because it always seems to sneak up on me, but we're almost less than a month away. April 23rd through 26th are the dates this year.
Yes.
So we're very excited. We do have a world championships coming up this year for all disciplines, really. So the eventing, the show jumping, the dressage, I believe some other disciplines, I should know this, are all taking place at the same place at Aachen in August this year, which is very exciting. It's the 20-year anniversary since we had the last World Equestrian Games at Aachen in 2006. So that's a very big deal. As a result, I believe we're going to see a very, very stacked Cosequin 4-star short this year at the Kentucky 3-day. I think a lot of the top horses and riders that are going to be aiming for a spot on the U.S. team for the World Championships in Aachen will go through the short route versus going and doing a five-star. So I do think we're going to see a very, very heavily stacked four-star list, potentially a limited four-star list to make sure that the schedule can accommodate everybody. I have heard that they might be limiting entries to 40 in the four-star short, but I am going to confirm that. And then as far as five-star entries, I don't have a whole lot to preview you with just yet. I do know we're getting a few, of course, international riders coming over. We can, of course, anticipate that world number one, Harry Mead's going to come over, although I don't know that he sent his entries in yet. But we do have riders from Great Britain, such as Tom McEwen, Tom Jackson, and David Duell all coming over. So that's about all the preview I have Michael for you Young, right now.
Does Michael Young have the flu?
Anybody from Germany coming over?
Is there any way we can cancel his plane ticket?
Yeah. Make sure that there are no routes from Germany to Lexington in early April. No, I don't think we're going to see Michael this year. Of course, we could still be surprised. Fisher Chipmunk would be the only horse he really has that would be ready to do a five-star at this stage. And Fisher Chipmunk does not need to come over to Kentucky to make a bid for the World Championships team in Aachen. So I don't think that he will, at the horse's age, put him on a plane to come over here when he, I'm not saying he's a shoo-in for the team because there are a lot of very good young Germans coming up. But I don't think, I personally don't think that we're going to see a Michael Young here this year. He does not really have another horse that's ready to come over and win a Kentucky like Fisher Chipmunk would.
All right. We'll, gotcha. We'll miss him. We'll miss you, Michael. We're sorry you're not coming.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I do.
No, it'll be interesting to see who does come, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It was always so fun. Now, what I seen, and give me some the scoop on this, that Tammy Smith has another up-and-comer with a young black horse?
Tammy Smith does have another up-and-comer. She believes he's just kind of getting his eventing career started, but I believe he's related to the great Maibaum in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if he's a full sibling. Now you're going to make me go fact-check myself here, but I do know that he's closely related.
I thought they were related, but I wasn't sure. So yeah, you and I will both just share misinformation.
Exactly. And that's exactly what the news is for, right?
Your podcast,
so his name is My Fire.
Yeah, your podcast is accurate. Ours is for misinformation. That's what we do here.
It's all good.
It does not look like he's a full sibling. I'm looking up his breeding right now, but he is named My Fire. He's also owned by the same family, Eric Markell and Ellen Ahern, that owned My Bomb. So we will keep an eye on him and see what he's going to do with his life. That's very exciting, though.
I know. I just saw him and I was like, oh, it's a sibling. She's going to do the same thing. Come win Kentucky again.
Yeah. This year. Yeah, this year. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, he's ready. Now, obviously we'll be there. Are you going to have any time to do anything besides sit in the press room and crunch numbers and do things like that?
Well, typically my Kentucky, I'm honestly probably the most supported that I am at any other event. So I do have a full team coming. I've got a videographer, I've got a team of photographers working with us. And then I have a girl, Sydney Severson, who does social media for us. And then that kind of leaves me to do the reporting. So I'll be kind of running back and forth between the mix zone and the media center to write things and then finding other things to occupy me in between, of course.
Well, we love Sydney. Yeah,
we've had her on the show.
Sydney's amazing.
Yeah. I love it.
I was so glad when you hired her, actually. I was made my day.
She's very on brand for us. And actually recently I told her, I said, hey, you know how like brands engage on social, like on Instagram with other brands and they have like their little personality. I was like, can you just do that for us? Like, can you just be our Instagram? And she's done a great job. So, you know, I just said, hey, run with it and let me know how much time you spend on it. But her sense of humor is very relatable. And she's also very relatable as an amateur eventer trying to make it in the sport herself. So she's got a really cool series on Eventing Nation called The Amateur Experience that we're just kind of getting off the ground. So you can check out. I've got a new story actually coming in the next, hopefully this week, really, on an amateur rider who's also a small animal vet. So we'll have that coming up on Eventing Nation soon too.
Yes, I love connecting with the amateurs because that is just that's who most of us are, you know.
100%.
so much more relatable. So
yeah, well, and we kind of came into this year, we got a lot of really great feedback from a reader survey that we did over the winter, and really just coming out of last year, we really wanted to double down on really making sure we were talking to the amateur constituent of people, because that is the foundation of our sport, who is literally funding the sport in every way, shape, or form. So we felt that we could really do more to talk to them and give them content that was relatable. So hopefully we will accomplish that this year. That's my goal.
That's awesome. Well, that's fantastic. So tell me, Glenn wants me to ask about the Olympics, which clearly is a million miles away, but there has
to be. It feels like it, but it's going to be here sooner than we think. I mean, first of all, on my side, the media credentialing process opens a couple years in advance. So we should actually see the credentialing process for the Olympics open sometime this year, because it does take a while to confirm whether or not you're going to get a credential and from where. There are a couple avenues for credentialing through media outlets. So if you are a media member who is hoping to get an assignment for the Olympics, please do make sure that you are keeping an eye out for that, because that will be coming up. Yes, I hear you. Jamie, do you have something in your throat?
Oh, excuse me. All right. Thank you. I mean, if you get a credential for like horses, obviously we give it for horses, can we also then go watch like ping pong and stuff?
No,
like
I wish. I know. I think if you get a credential to the Olympics, you should get to go wherever you want. Like that's like you're already there. Yeah. But no, it's very specific. So for me as media, I get credentialed for my sport. So I get credentialed for equestrian sports. They don't divide it up by discipline, which is nice. But that is it. I get access to the main press center and the equestrian venues. And that is all that is printed on my credential. And that is the only place I am allowed to go without any other kind of ticket. So it is very strict. But yes, we're very excited for LA 28. It will be really fun to have a Olympics in the United States. The cross country, the eventing portion, of course, we are very much waiting with bated breath to see what the final product of the cross country course will be, because there is not an existing cross country course at the Santa Anita Racetrack in Arcadia, which is where all equestrian sports will take place. So Alec Lahore of Great Britain has been tapped as the course designer for this year. He's already made several trips over there to start putting his mind to the land that he's got to work with there.
I just don't understand how they're going to do that and potentially keep racing like in the
general. I also have questions. Yes, I'm unsure, because I think they're going to have to, you know, I have not had a formal conversation with Alec yet. I have to go through the LA media team and the FEI to be able to speak to him about, which is really funny to me, because I literally was talking to him on WhatsApp about a different story. And I was like, hey, so if I want to talk to you about LA, how do I do that? He's like, oh yeah, we have to go through this channel. I'm like, but I'm talking to you right now. But anyway, so I haven't really had a chance to formally talk to him. There will be a test event that's run at the venue probably sometime next year, just to, as an abbreviated cross-country course, just to kind of make sure everything's kosher. So that will give him a chance to really test some of his layout of the track. But there will, you know, you're correct. There is going to have to be some construction done. I don't know what their plan is in terms of how it's going to affect racing or anything else that they have going on during the year. So that's all information that we will be very excited to learn, kind of how that's going to all into place.
Yes. And then one more question before we let you go. Are you heading to the World Cup in Texas?
I am not, unfortunately. I actually, the last time the World Cup was here, I tried to get some work for it. But with the timing of it, I think Marty, who runs the press office there, at least this year he is, would have given me a job. But I just, with it being so close to Kentucky, it's kind of crunch time for us.
I'm sure. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's just too close for me to not go. So,
oh my God, you have to.
I have to go. So I'm heading down to the World Cup. I'm going to go on, I think, just, you know, for the weekend, just to get a taste of it. But they're the show jump finals are on Friday night, and the dressage finals are on Saturday night. And we're just making a whole big event of it. And so got together.
It's going to be really fun.
I was so excited, and I was like, oh my God, we have to go. These tickets are so expensive. So, you know, here comes the press credential. I feel like,
yeah, Yeah, there you go.
I'll cover it for you.
Horses in the Morning, live from the World Cup Finals. I will also tell your listeners, so I stumbled across this really cool Instagram page that Derek Braun, who is in charge of the Split Rock Jumping Tour, who is also in charge of putting on the World Cup Finals, they've started this Instagram page called Horse Show 360. And it's basically all of these behind the scenes videos of the team turning Dickies Arena into this horse show venue. And it's really cool to see how they do this, because this is not a horse show venue. This is an indoor stadium that I guess they must have basketball. I'm exposing myself here. They have some other sport there. And so they have to really take in all of the infrastructure and logistics into account in terms of how we're going to put horses in here. So this Instagram account has been really cool. It's just Derek kind of walking around and talking about how the facility is going to be set up and used for horses. And I find it to be very, very interesting. So anybody listening who's interested in that type of thing should go follow this Horse Show 360 page, because it's fascinating.
That's awesome. I'm going to check that out. Horse Show 360. Okay, perfect. Yep.
Well, Sally, before we let you go, you have a podcast now, I think, since the last time we talked to you. How's it going?
What? I do. Yeah. We just started our second season of the Go Eventing podcast. I actually have to thank you guys a lot, because, you know, we used to work on the Heels Down Happy Hour podcast together, and you've just been such mentors and idea bouncers for me over the year. So I have a lot to be grateful for from you guys. But the Go Eventing podcast has been quite successful. We're very excited about it. We have episodes that come out every other Tuesday. So we will have a new episode coming out next Tuesday from this week. And we have some really exciting people. We try to get people from all over the world that are involved with the sport in multiple different facets. Of course, we have a lot of riders on. But then this year, we're also going to start doing some kind of deeper dive episodes into topics that kind of we really just want to nerd out on. So we're going to have potentially a multi-part episode all about safety and the history of it and the data behind it. So we're very excited to see kind of where that format of it goes to.
Jamie, I don't know if you remember when Sally came on. This is probably, I don't know, how long ago did you start with Eventing Nation?
Oh, gosh, probably 2013.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. You know, over 10 years ago. And you came on here right after that, but you were so shy and so reserved.
I'm going to have to go back and find that.
I'll have to find it sometime. But, I mean, you've come a long way, girl. Let me tell you, from those early days. You've come a long way.
That's so nice. Yeah. No, I definitely feel like that's really funny. I'm going to have to go back and listen either to like an early Horses in the Morning or an early Heels Down, because I do feel like it took me a minute to find my comfort level.
Let me tell you, it took us a minute too. So
you're still getting used to it, aren't you?
Yeah, we're only 4,000 episodes in. Maybe by 6,000, we'll figure this out.
Any day now.
Yeah. Sally, thank you so much for joining us today. Of course, it's Eventing Nation. And what's the name of the podcast where they can find it on the podcast player?
The Go Eventing podcast is on any podcast player that should be in existence. And if you have trouble finding it, just email us at podcast@eventingnation.com.
The level of trust in Cavallo is unmatched. They've been used by everyone from the late Queen Elizabeth II to the horses ridden by Beyonce. And of course, us, our horses. Jamie and I both use Cavallo boots. Whether you're transitioning a horse to barefoot, managing a rehab case, or just looking for extra protection over metal shoes, Cavallo boots stay on through all conditions. They're a practical, horse-first investment in your animal's long-term soundness. Visit Cavallo-Inc.com for more information and sizing charts, too. They have everything from little tiny mini boots, which you really want to hang from your rear view because they're so cute, to ones you don't want to hang from your rear view, and that's the draft horse size. They have everything in between. And I will tell you, they stay on because I drove Scooter in those boots for years, all over all kinds of terrain, swampy, muddy, rocks, the whole thing. So they you don't have any problem with them twisting and turning. They're really good boots. Check out Cavallo-Inc.com. Well, we want to welcome back one of our terrific auditors. She's been on the show before. Her name is Paige. And Paige is here to talk about an event that she rode in that looked so cool and like so much fun. And Ashley was on recently talking about fox hunting. So, Paige, thanks for joining us and thanks for being back again.
Yeah. Hey, good morning. And thanks for having me. Happy to share the fun stuff that goes on here in Virginia.
Okay, I was just going to ask and remind everybody where you're from. Virginia is the place. So what was this event that you posted pictures of?
Oh, okay. Well, I belong to Fox Hunting Club here called Bull Run Hunt. And they've been around since 1911. and still going strong. We are known as the friendliest hunt club in the South because we're super friendly and inviting to newcomers, where in the old days, some fox hunting clubs were kind of snooty and exclusive. We're very friendly. So this hunt, the vixen hunt started, you know, becoming popular. And last year we had our first Barbie themed vixen hunt. And the vixen hunt is all ladies. And it's a day for the ladies to get out and hunt. And then the men in the hunt serve us by serving food and drinks and stirrup cup before we hunt. And this year we had over 100 riders.
Wow.
Yeah, I forgot how many we had last year, but it was definitely a lot more popular than last year, because as the word spread and pictures on Facebook got out, more people wanted to participate. We had people from all over the country come, as far as Colorado, Wyoming, Arizona, and South Carolina and North Carolina. And, of course, lots of Virginians.
Well, it's a Barbie hunt. I have never seen so much pink in my life. Where did you get that pink coat?
Oh, I got that off of eBay.
Of course. And,
yeah. It was from the Legally Blonde clothesline. You know, remember the movie Elle? Everything was pink?
Yeah.
Yeah. And unbelievably, this year, there was another lady from Georgia that had... maybe Georgia. She had on the same exact coat as I did.
And oh my God, how embarrassing.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of mortified because last year I was the only one in that coat. And then I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh.
Well, there's only so many places to buy pink coats.
I mean, right. She looked fabulous though. And we both wore it well with styling differently. You know, I did the pink and green theme and she did more of the feathers and this and that theme. So we look different in our own way.
I'm looking at a picture of you here. Tell us about your stunning horse.
Oh, my stunning horse. Well, for those that may remember the last time I talked, my beloved thoroughbred passed away unexpectedly on Halloween. And some of our hunt members who are staff immediately offered this stunning Irish sport horse that's hunted in four countries, and he's 17.3.
You look like a peanut up there.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was like, finally, I look like a petite, thin little lady. That's what I always wanted.
That's how you do it. You just get on bigger horses.
Right.
Okay, noted. Thank you.
Right. I was like, man, my butt doesn't even look good, big on this horse. So he is a huntsman's horse. So his owner is a huntsman for a hunt club in Canada. And he also was a huntsman for Palm Beach Hounds, which is a hunt club down in Palm Beach, Florida. So that horse, he is amazing. He's like a made hunt horse. He was a hireling in England and Ireland, came to Canada. His dad told me after he ran away with me at a gallop couple times while we're out hunting, passing everybody, which is a major faux pas, that he's never had to have breaks and he doesn't know how to ride in a field. And so I asked his dad if I could change his bit. So I changed it to a Pelham with some curb reins, and that was the ticket. That's what was the ticket with my thoroughbred too. And he's learned this whole season to be a good citizen and stay behind the horse in front of him. And, you know, he knows when to slow down and he knows not to go after the fox when he sees one.
So he's practicing being a bloodhound too.
Right. Yeah. A fox ran by one time and he was like, come on, we got to go. And I'm like, no, I was having to hold him back.
And the last thing you want running away with you is a 17.3 hand horse. But I got to say, because of his color, he's white. He looks great in pink, you know, with all the pink.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I won the best Barbie for, I rode him in third flight that day because I had ridden him in second flight. Second flight is a walk, trot, canter, gallop. Third flight is walk, trot, and canter if everybody's cool with it. So I was tired from Saturday. So Sunday I did third flight, and I couldn't believe it. I won Best Barbie, and I had this same outfit on as last year, and my horse had on the same decorations, except I think Jasper did it because he's white, because Ernie was bay.
I got to ask you, you said the men did the food. Was it any good?
Oh, yes. Well, we had one of our members' sons who has a restaurant cater it.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
But the guys all had to serve they helped serve the food, and they got us drinks. And one guy was the bartender and in charge of keeping the champagne fountain filled.
Okay, 100 women riding in a hunt. How many bottles of champagne is that, Jamie, do you think? Is that?
I don't know. We had Bloody Marys and screwdrivers.
I was going to say, champagne is not what I'm going to ride with, but Bloody Marys and screwdrivers are going to be my go-to.
Yeah, that's what I like, too. And then for the stirrup cup, though, we had actually Jasper's parents did the stirrup cup, and they made Malibu Barbie rum and Barbie tequila sunrise, something like that.
Oh my god. And was anybody on their horse at the end?
Yeah, this was before we left. the cups were pink champagne cups or they're glasses actually, but they're plastic with gold rim on them. So we would all ride up to the little bar, and people, the men and other people that were on the ground would hand us our drinks.
Oh, so it's sort of like when you watch a marathon and the runners are running by and they grab the water bottle on the way by. That's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yep. And that's a traditional thing that we do at the Fox Hunt is have stirrup cup. And on fancy high holy days, they'll serve stirrup cup on trays out of sterling silver little. They're like little stirrup cups with the fox head on them, or they can be like a little sterling silver shot glass with the Hunt's monogram on it. Well, so, and it's usually port and sherry.
Well, Jennifer's not much of a drinker, so she used to carry lemonade in her flask. What do you carry in yours?
Well, it depends. Most recently, I've had Screwball in it a lot. The peanut butter whiskey?
Yes.
But I ran out, so... That's a 911 emergency, but I do on hot days, I'll put water in it.
Well, this sounds like a great lot of fun. That's why I wanted to have you on, because the pictures are amazing. I'll put the pictures in the show notes too. Is there a website for the hunt?
Yes, it's bullrunhunt.com.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us again, Paige. We really appreciate it. And you look great in pink.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, it is time for This Day in Equine History, and we're going to head the first one, Jamie, back to 1887. And this is a direct quote out of the newspaper in Luray, Virginia. A chaotic scene unfolded at the local depot today when the horse team belonging to the Hotel Lawrence bolted into a terrifying display of speed. Triggered by what the witness described as careless negligence of the driver, the frightened animals initiated a high-stakes pursuit that tore through the northern outskirts of town. The violent gait of the runaway team kept onlookers in a state of high alarm until local citizen George Burrell managed to overtake the horses. Basically, he was riding his horse, overtook the horses, and brought the carriage to a halt. This is like out of an old Western movie.
This happened in Back to the Future Part 3 when Clara was about to go over the cliff.
There you go.
Yeah, and then Doc Brown jumped on a horse and like Wayne got her and pulled her off. Yeah.
Same thing. In a stroke of remarkable fortune, the wild chase ended with no injuries reported to the horses, and the hotel's shuttle carriage remained entirely intact. So good job, George, for saving the day. This is out of an old Western, but that was exact quote. They wrote different back then. You know what's funny?
I really like the term careless negligence.
That's true. We've known a few of those people. Then on the next one, in March 16th of 1802, the U.S. Congress passed the Military Peace Establishment Act, officially establishing the United States Military Academy at West Point. For over a century, horses were the backbone of West Point. Cadets were required to master equitation. This training was so rigorous that it produced some of history's greatest cavalry officers, including George Armstrong Custer and George S. Patton. You know, when I saw George S. Patton, I thought, well, you know, he was tanks, but he graduated from West Point in 1909. He was horses when he graduated from West Point.
I mean, I don't know as much about history. All I remember is hearing Custer's last stand.
Yeah, that's right.
So apparently it didn't end
well.
He
rode himself into oblivion is what he did. It did not go well at the end. His horse may have survived. He didn't.
That'll be another day in history later on. Okay.
Okay. On this day in 1970, a champion thoroughbred named Sham was born. What is Sham known for, Jamie?
Sham is known for coming in second to Secretariat.
That is correct. Often called the greatest horse to never win the Triple Crown. He famously finished second to Secretariat in both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes. But get this, is what a lot of people don't know. Sham would have been a legend. In 1973, in that race in 1973, he ran second fastest Kentucky Derby in history, a time that would have won him nearly every other Derby before then or since then, because he was second, still beating all the records that had happened before then, except for that leading horse, Secretariat, who took the fastest time.
Hold on, I'm looking this up. What was his time in the Kentucky Derby? Let's see.
So,
159 4/5. That's like one of the fastest. I think that's Fusaichi Pegasus. Why am I such a nerd? Why do I know what Fusaichi Pegasus' time in the Derby was? Sorry.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting that he was born this day, and he's just one of those horses that he was born in the wrong year. A year later, he'd have been fine, but a year before, he'd have been fine. Not this year. Not against Secretariat. So there you go. There are this day in equine history. I hope you learn a little something along the way and some fun stories.
I love it. And I like the old timey music you were playing before. You should stretch that out a little bit.
Okay.
I like that.
I can do that. Yep. No problem. Well, we're going to wrap up the show soon. Auditors, hang on. You had one other thing you wanted to mention today.
Man. Yeah. Kind of sucks. This really sucks. Like, I'm going to just like spill it and not cry because I've cried
about this
for days and days and days. Like, I'm paralyzed talking, thinking about it. But I took Homer. He's been going in for checkups once a month and his cancer's back. And they give you a terrible prognosis and this is all run the course of exactly what they said would happen. So I Hail Marying and he's getting ozone therapy every other day. And we're just going to do a lot of stuff. And I still have a call in with the oncologist for all of this. But I mean,
Homer.
Shit, I love that dog.
Everybody loves Homer. So you can't not love Homer. Just by looking at his pictures, you love Homer. Ugh. I'm so sorry to hear that. That does suck.
I didn't mean to cry.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I'm going to meet with the doctor, call them today and see. I mean, I have so many vets involved in this and everybody's really trying, but they just don't give you a whole lot of hope, you know?
How long has it been since he stopped his previous treatments? Was it a year?
October. He said it would be about 6 to 9 months. And I was like, why don't we just do it all the time? Like, just keep doing it if it's worth. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I met Homer right after you got Homer, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that right after you got Homer?
Uh-huh.
I thought so. He was a little guy then.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the only time he's ever a little guy. Homer's
he's only 3 and a half, you know, like this summer.
I thought he was older than that.
No. Oh, okay. And when I talked to the vet about it, I was like, how can a dog this young get cancer? And they were like, children get cancer. It's indiscriminate. It just picks whoever it wants and it's just the worst. And Anyway,
we're all going to be thinking about you and Homer for sure.
Thanks.
All right. Good luck with that. And keep us informed. All right. Let us know how it goes. Hey, I'll end the show on a little bit happier note. The Paralympics just finished, and there was a legendary American athlete that captured her 11th Paralympic gold medal in the Winter Olympics. She has 24 overall, and she did it in sitting cross-country relay, and she is now the greatest multi-sport athlete in history. At the age of 36, her name is Oksana Masters. She defied a grueling preseason, which included surgery, a bone infection, and a concussion, to dominate the snow once again. She finished the games with 5 medals, 4 gold, 1 bronze, bringing her career total to 24 Paralympic medals. Get this, she was born, and this is an amazing story if you haven't heard it. She was born in the Ukraine in 1989. Her birth defects, including missing weight-bearing bones in her legs and had webbed fingers, they think were linked to the Chernobyl nuclear disaster because she lived in that area, or her parents did. She spent 7 years in a Ukrainian orphanage before she was adopted by her American mother, Gay Masters. Both of her legs were eventually amputated, one at 9 and one at 14, and she also went on reconstructive surgery for her hands, but she has medaled in 4 different sports across both summer and winter games: rowing, cycling, cross-country skiing, and biathlon. And I saw an interview with her the other day. She's the most chipper, happy person you've ever seen in your life. She is just amazing and remarkable. So I just wanted to mention her because it was absolutely one of the many amazing things that happened at the Paralympic Games, if you were following it all. So congratulations to Oksana Masters. It was a wonderful time, and she is one of the most amazing athletes ever at the Olympics. So congratulations to her. Auditors, hold on. We're going to answer some questions that you guys posed to us in the post show. You want me to say it? Spain or Geld?
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're marching toward death. Get the